Great news. There's a quick way you can save money. Switch to GEICO. GEICO could help you get great coverage at a great price. And it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to GEICO.com today and see how much you could save.
Whoop, whoop. Good Friday, everybody. Key, whoop, whoop. I know that we don't have a like a Chef Boyardee necessarily on the books for today, but do you have plans for the grill? I know it's a Friday or a Saturday afternoon when I get the obligatory key grill shot with your narration as you pan down the grill. Is that happening tonight?
Actually, the funny thing, it is. We are going across the street to a neighbor's, and we are getting it in. We set our menu last night, and I will be sending 4 o'clock photos.
Are they going to season the food correctly? Do you need to be worried?
I'm in charge of this. Don't. you ain't never got to look. It won't be taking no brat straight out the package, the foam, and then slamming it down on the grill. No, we won't be doing that. Taking a whole T-bone steak. They take a steak. Oh, God.
Travis.
Take the T-bone, throw it on the grill, and then throw some salt and pepper on top of it. Oh, it tastes so good. It's like, man, y'all don't stop.
Travis, we do have some feedback on the poll, by the way. Early Keyshawn is leading early in the poll, but one of the listeners wanted to know why all your picks are creeper picks, Travis.
Well, I mean, I didn't really think of it that way, but I guess you. I would argue.
So yeah, what does he have? He's got invisibility. He's got mind reading and invisibility.
X-ray
so
vision.
He can be in your house. X-ray. Oh yeah, you are creeper. Oh no, man, let's go, listener.
No, the problem is that the listener is a creeper, and therefore he sees it through that lens, and he's putting something in there that I had no intent. Just because the listener has a certain point of view doesn't mean that I share that point of view. So mine was just functionality. Mine was just knowing where I stand with people. Mine was just being able to live forever and ever and ever and be able to go wherever I want, not to have to maybe wait in the line with my invisibility. I'm not going to use it for any nefarious purposes.
So why you got X-ray vision there?
They're asking.
Why you got X-ray vision there?
To make sure it's safe before I go into a place. I like to make sure what's on the other side of that wall before I walk through. I just need to make sure everything's safe.
But you're going to do anything to you.
We'll see.
I don't know, Travis.
We all got our things. I can take your clothes off with my brain, so we all got our stuff.
You can't win them all, and that's fine. I won last Wednesday, so it's fine. I'm basically winning about every other one of these things over
well,
the
you
last
won, you know, I wasn't then, in, so that has that one really don't count.
And I tell you, ever since America found out about LZ cheating and his little campaign strategies, he's not doing too well, no. But Keyshawn's winning with 44% of the vote. So, Keyshawn, since you got to pick 5 powers, I guess maybe that's helping you out. Everyone else only picked 4. But so far, it's doing well for you, that strategy.
Well, no, it's not that I picked 5. What I went to pick, I was told that I was wrong when, in fact, I was right. And I think the listeners realize – that the producer continuously screwed things up, so they're picking in my favor.
Well, me screwing things up ain't nothing new to the listeners, so that's all right.
I'm still kind of dumbstruck. I'm still kind of dumbstruck by the whole idea of Carson Wentz is physically on another level than Dak Prescott. That kind of tied my brain in a knot.
Man, will you stop listening to that?
Man, he made him sound like he was Jesus Christ the way he was talking about Carson Wentz. Physically,
y'all gonna listen to me one day when I keep trying to tell y'all about some of these dudes. Tim is good; he worked with us on the company, but sometimes they just, you know, they jump out there too far, and you got to reel them back in.
And you brought up a great point, Keith. When you talk of all the things, let's go to Jared Goff for a second. Jared Goff is a lot of things, and sometimes he's really good, sometimes maybe less than really good, but he's there under center every single game. That's not nothing. All right, as promised, we're joined by former NFL general manager, Keys, former general manager, Mike Tannenbaum, joining us on the Sprint People's Hotline. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good, Mike. So Carson Wentz is a better athlete than Dak Prescott. Is Carson Wentz a better athlete What was it? Travis, better athlete,
More physically gifted,
and a better athlete than Dak Prescott.
Yeah, I don't see that. I'm the biggest Dak Prescott fan there is. Someone's gonna have to explain to me. Like I've said this for a while, guys. I think Jerry Jones totally blew it. This is a guy that's 26 years old. He's won 40 games as a starting NFL quarterback. He's high character. He could beat with his arm and his legs. I just don't know what we're missing here. I thought he re-signed good but not great players and Jalen Smith and Lael Collins. And when you're fortunate enough to have a franchise-winning quarterback that is only 26 years old, you sign him right away and you say thank you.
Mike, what's the holdup? Is it just a matter of negotiations and the money and when the money comes and how much there is? Or is there something else other than just we can't agree to the terms of the deal? We love each other. We want to get married long term, but we're working on the prenup. Or is somebody not sure about what they want to do?
To me, you know, he rewarded Zeke Elliott, who had 2 years to go and held out. And I don't believe you reward that behavior when you don't need to. And Zeke Elliott is a great player, but they're nothing without Dak Prescott. So, to me, there's a deal to be made there. They just got to figure it out. But I don't know why Jerry waited as long as he did.
Do you think this is going to have any sort of lasting impact in terms of the relationship between player and franchise?
I don't know, but I will say this. I think there's an underrated aspect of this story that people aren't giving enough credit to, which is this. Dak Prescott has all the leverage in the world. He's over the hump of taking the risk, guys. He was on a rookie minimum deal last year. He's playing for $31 million. So if I'm Dak Prescott, I'm sitting back, my feet are up on my desk, and I'm like, bring it on, Jerry. You know why? Because I got $31 this year. I got $38 next year if you franchise me again. Because, again, guys, remember, it's 120% if you get franchised in back-to-back years. He has $69 million fully guaranteed. So if I'm Dak, I'm like, thank you very much for not doing my deal. I assume the risk. I won. And this gets closer and closer to Kirk Cousins where he may wind up being, you know, a true free agent.
But let me ask you this question, though. Mike had been in this business much like myself, can evaluate talent. Not quite like me, but you've done a good job. When you look at, and I told this to the guys the other day, when you look at Kirk Cousins, we understand he got the money with the franchise tag. But did Washington really miss out on anything? Have they missed out on anything? In all honesty, did he take the Minnesota Vikings over the hump?
Well, I would say this. You know, he won a road playoff game, and that's hard to do. And Kirk Cousins is not perfect by any stretch. But my point is, like, he's good. And
did you just give me the road playoff game?
What is?
Come on, man, do better.
But Washington hasn't done anything without him. Now, the only grade we could give Dwayne Haskins right now is a grade of incomplete. But my point being is, if let's say Dallas loses Dak Prescott, who are they going to get to replace him, and how well is that player going to play?
Well, that's very true that you have him right there in his hands. There's no question about it. He's right there with you. But when you look at it as a whole, it's almost like I go to the Rams situation with Jared Goff. They were in a position to do that deal because it made sense at the time that they did it. He led him to a Super Bowl he didn't win, but he also had Todd Gurley, who was healthy, Robert Woods and Cooks, and a whole bunch of a cast of other characters. Do the Rams look back at it amongst each other and go, damn, we did it too early? Or they go, oh, well, it's not that big of a deal. Let's just keep moving forward. Eventually he'll get there. So when you look at the Dak Prescott situation, is that what Jerry Jones is saying? As a front office guy, is he saying, we don't know if he's a $40 million Super Bowl quarterback because we feel we can get the same situation with another guy 2 years from now that just puts us in a playoff game?
So two thoughts, Keith. First of all, I checked your contract before I came on, and you are contractually obligated to refer to it as USC's Robert Woods, so that's a fine.
Okay. Well, you still owe me money for fines.
And if it accrued interest going back all those years, we're talking about a lot. So I just know that the Trojan, you know, the bloodlines run deep there. But, no, in all seriousness, guys, I'd say this. Goff is a good example where we'll see. To me, greatness is about winning, you know, we were just on GetUp, we were having this debate about Mahomes or Brady. And the thing about Brady, to me, that was his greatness, was he won with whomever was out there. And we don't know if Goff could win without guys like Todd Gurley, the offensive line not being the same. We're going to learn a lot more about Jared Goff. And you're right, there could be some buyer's remorse there. My point is, when you watch Prescott play, and they've done a great job. You know, they drafted CeeDee Lamb. They were able to acquire Amari Cooper. They have great weapons. But if you pull out Prescott, I don't know you're not going to win with Andy Dalton. So to me, what are your alternatives? And if you're talking about draft capital, is it multiple first round picks to go up and get a guy?
But let me ask you this though.
I think the replacement cost is so high.
Mike, you said that they're not going to win with Andy Dalton, right? That's what you said. What makes you think that they're not going to win with Andy Dalton? What makes you think that they don't think that Andy Dalton may fit certain situations that they do a little bit better?
Because I think when they walk out there with Andy Dalton, and look, Dak signed his tender, so it's a little bit of a moot point. Uh-huh. I think they lose all credibility because I think what Andy Dalton has shown himself is he is a good, competent NFL quarterback. And what we've seen with Dak Prescott is his ceiling's really high. And Dak's good is really good. And he's won, again, the division. He's won 40 games. Like, that's Russell Wilson territory. And Andy Dalton, over a long period of time, just isn't in the same class.
No, I get it. Look, I was on a team once where a guy named Glenn Foley was our starting quarterback. Okay? well, we got a guy named Vinny Testaverde that was cast off. And people said he couldn't play and we couldn't win and blah, blah, blah. That's all I'm saying. And we inserted Vinny into our lineup, and he had the best season ever. And completion percentage in the playoff game was ridiculous. So that's all I'm saying. So when people say you can't do something with a guy because he was somewhere else and it looked a certain way, doesn't mean that it's going to look that way with the Cowboys. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I just
thank you.
Again, I think Prescott is sitting there saying, like, you know what? I bet on myself. I bet on this rookie contract. And now I'm going to make $31 million. And if I don't love this deal from you, Jerry, I'm really good playing it out. And, oh, by the way, if you want to tag me next year, I'll take my $38 million. Thank you very much.
Mike Tannenbaum joining us on. Go ahead, LZ.
What's good? Mike, thinking more locally, because at the end of the day, I really don't care about Dallas Cowboys, but I do care about my Rams, and I do care what happens to this franchise. You said that you're waiting to see if Jared Goff can do what he's been able to do the first couple of seasons under Sean McVay without having the same level of talent. Is it a true talent drain that the Rams are facing this upcoming season, or is it a name recognition drain?
No, that's a very fair point. You know, we talk about guys like Cam Akers. You know, Cam Akers was highly, highly recruited coming out of high school. We'll see how he does. You know, Florida State obviously had a really poor offensive line last year. I'm actually a big Cooper Kupp fan, so I think to the extent that he'll get more reps is certainly part of it. But I do think when you look at some of the players that they did lose, you know, look, Todd Gurley wasn't the same guy, but he was so productive out of the backfield. And then obviously defensively, maybe Clay Matthews was, you know, towards the end of like where his production was, but those guys are still hard to find. And then believe it or not, like to me, you know, Zerline, because they're going to be close games. He was a weapon. So I think when you add it up, I don't know if LA took a step forward or backwards this year.
Mike, very quickly, in about 30 seconds or so, do you think that we will have games scheduled on time? Will the NFL season start on time?
You know, I'm going to hedge here. I think we're going to play a full season, but I wouldn't be surprised if we start on October 1st. And here's why. We have to remember that Tampa Bay can host the Super Bowl all the way into late February, early March. And if I'm the NFL, every day I can wait is a good day. That's a day that we learn more and hopefully, you know, we're closer to a vaccine. So, I think they're going to want to see what happens with MLB, the NBA, and I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they moved it back, maybe eliminated the Pro Bowl, maybe eliminated, you know, the bye week and the postseason and still get in the full schedule, but maybe start October 1.
ESPN NFL Insider, former NFL General Manager Mike Tannenbaum joining us on the Sprint People's Hotline. Mike, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. And Key, just remember, USC, right?
Oh, go on. You traded me. Bad trade.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Scott. Thank you.
All right. The Dodgers are expected to win more games than anyone else in Major League Baseball's shortened season, and there is a big reason why that they've never had before. That's coming up on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. Raj, I am not going to let you characterize my picks as something that they were not intended to. Just because you and the listeners all share a one-track mind does not mean that my picks were nefarious.
Travis, for one, I'm offended by that because I helped dig you out of the hole with that speech in America Forgiving. So we got past General Lee. But now with this stalker, people are saying you got stalker picks, you got creeper picks on the superpower. You can go on ESPN Los Angeles Twitter feed and vote or check out the theme. I don't know if you can recover from this, Trav. This is twice. We didn't got you out of jail once, but I don't know if we can do this twice, man. It's going to be tough.
No, I'm fine. Like all other things, it'll come back around. My picks, X-ray vision, the ability to read minds, invisibility, and immortality, all perfectly harmless.
Well, LZ is pulling close to even with 38% of the vote. Keyshawn's still leading with 39% of the vote with his five picks. But Travis, you're at 21%, so you're not out of there, but a couple people have caught on to the theme of your picks, and I don't know, maybe you thought it was funny, but America doesn't.
I didn't even realize what I was doing until the weirdo listeners pointed it out along the way.
That's even scarier. That you're not even conscious of it. That is even scarier, Travis. That's even more.
Clinton pointed this out. We were talking to him a few minutes ago, and it's a great point. The Dodgers going into the 60-game season are the favorites, according to the Vegas odds makers, to win 37 games. That's the most. The Yankees are close with 36.5, but the Dodgers are at the top. And I think a big reason why is that the Dodgers have the ability to manipulate their roster like we've talked about a lot. They have a bunch of different guys that can play a bunch of different positions and not just, you know, a guy that can play center field and left field. That's not what I'm talking about. They have guys that can play center field and shortstop like Chris Taylor. They have guys that can play center field and first base like Cody Bellinger. They have a guy like Kike Hernandez who literally can play just about every position on the field. And what they also have is because they can flex like that, they can stick whoever isn't in the lineup that day in that new designated hitter role that's going to be in the National League, where if you are struggling to put your eight guys on the field to put together a lineup, and now all of a sudden if you're the Dodgers, you have 11 or 12 guys that could be on the field any given day, you have the ability to use that DH and also mix and match in that DH spot, which most teams don't have the ability to do. That is a huge advantage for this team.
It is, and that's why it's big for the Dodgers to be able to understand who they're going to use in the DH spot. But when they have a number of guys that they can do that with, you know, it's going to be something to their advantage when the season starts. Now, when you look at it, though, you talk about the teams that they're going to have to face, the Giants, obviously, the Angels, just the regional teams. Everybody's going to be close at the end, though, because it's essentially the beginning of baseball season where these teams that are dogs take off in the second half or fade, and the good ones take off in the second half of the season, and that's when you see the run to October. Well, you're not necessarily going to have that because the first 20, 25, 30 games of the season, everybody is either going to be together or those bad teams are going to pull away. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Dodgers wasn't even in first place for the first month of the season. I wouldn't even be surprised that you have one of the dog teams, because we've seen it in a regular season how this happened and where the Dodgers had to not necessarily rally, but they just continued to stay the course. Then all of a sudden the tide shifted to you look up and they was, you know, 18 games in first. You know, it's just like, okay, are we going to see that with this short seasoning of 60 games where the worst teams, the bad teams, the Arizonas, the San Diegos, all of a sudden they're going to be leader of the pack in the beginning of the day, but then the Dodgers have to make a strong push toward the end.
Yeah, I had conversations with a couple of team presidents, and they were excited about the permanency of the DH position because they believe that it's going to speed the game up. And, you know, I agree that this certainly is a scenario in which the game can be sped up. But to me, it also takes out some of the drama that encompasses being a manager. And I don't know if other baseball peers are willing to make that swap on a permanent basis, in which you may exchange 10 more minutes of time, maybe 15, in exchange for the drama of seeing what a manager is going to do in a tough situation. And eventually, you know, we keep going this path of trying to find ways to, quote unquote, speed the game up and not, in my opinion, really address some of the bigger issues that drag the game on, like the routines of batters coming in and out of the box every single time, you know, after a pitch. Like, I think that puts more time on it than anything. I just wonder if this push, guys, is just undermining the integrity of aspects of the game that we really enjoy, like this sort of chess match that has to happen with managers and whether or not they pull their pitchers.
Well, there's the chess match that the managers have to play in game. And then there's the, I don't know if it's chess, but it's certainly the long game that general managers and just teams have to play over the course of a season. Because I'm sure you guys have heard this, that most general managers will break a season down into three chunks, that you play the first 2 months of the season to kind of see what you have on your roster. You spend the next 2 months of the season trying to tinker with your roster, make trades, pull guys up from the minor leagues and whatnot. And then you spend the last 2 months of the season playing with what you've created. So there's the evaluation, there's the tinkering, and then there's the playing in 2 month chunks. Well, now in this situation, each one of those chunks breaks down to about 3.5 weeks. So, you know, you've got to figure out, instead of having 2 months to say, okay, what do I have here? You know what? That piece isn't working for me. I got to get rid of that guy. I got to bring in a different guy. And then you got 2 months to try to figure out where that guy is. These are decisions that are going to need to be made in the span of a couple of weeks as opposed to a couple of months. And you talk about the chess match of the managers. The general managers themselves are going to be under an incredible amount of pressure to try and tinker with their rosters, which is another advantage for the Dodgers because, quite honestly, they don't have to tinker very much. What they have in-house is more than good enough. Other teams are going to have to go out there and look to try to, okay, we've got to move this guy or that guy or bring this guy up. The Dodgers have everything they need sitting in that dugout today.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. And, you know, it's because this team was constructed the right way. And I hate using that phrase because I don't think there's a wrong way or a right way in the larger sense of sports. But when it comes to building a team that's going to last, the right way is to build a proper farm system and to groom in-house so you're not handcuffed by a whole bunch of free agents who are either past their prime or, worse yet, may take off and leave you because they were always just a rental to begin with. I like the fact that the Dodgers' main core of players that you're leaning on are guys that have been here and guys who are homegrown. And that's the reason why, Travis and Key, I feel like we have this advantage in terms of depth, is because we built from the ground up and we didn't skip any steps.
All right. Mike Tannenbaum just told us a couple of minutes ago that he thinks the start of the NFL season might be delayed. Does Key agree? That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security. Is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
So we had one player yesterday, Malcolm Jenkins, say that he does not think that football is an essential business. We just found out that 16 players of the 302 NBA players have tested positive for coronavirus heading into the bubble, which means they're going to have to self-isolate. NFL players haven't even started going back in. Keith, do you think that we're going to see a delay to the season? Do you think we'll start on time that second week in September like we typically do?
As of right now, everything is all systems go, right? But the NFL is always been an organization with a plan to alter things if need be. And I think something sitting there for plan two, if need be, which could push the season back, you know, 1 or 2, 3, 4 weeks and not actually start on September 2nd, but start, you know, whatever a month and a half out, middle of October, and still get in all of their games to push the Super Bowl back. And it could happen. I mean, but what you will see is you will see an NFL season. That's what you're going to
see. Oh, sure.
just because it's delayed a few weeks because something went wrong in another sport that's ahead of them. Maybe basketball, you know, the coronavirus kicks up in basketball to the point where they now learn something from basketball and baseball on how to tackle it if it happens to football. So they're in the right position, in the prime position, to be able to move it if need be.
You know, it's so hard for me to ignore what's happening in terms of cases shooting up all around, to not think that football is going to be impacted in some way. So I think there certainly is a possibility that they open camp on time. But I also think it's a strong possibility that the season gets suspended because of this pandemic. You know, when you look at the great state of Texas, where Jerry Jones is quietly from, the governor of the state, you know, just a couple of weeks ago was like, oh, yeah, woo, we're going to push through. Woo, woo. Now he's saying containment. He's closing bars at noon because the spread has superseded what they had estimated and hospitals are being overrun. We've seen similar cases happen in Florida, same situation happening in Arizona. We've heard, you know, some conversations in terms of counties. L.A. County reportedly has more cases than any other county in the country. And so when you see what happened when the country started to open back up and the cases spiked, I can't help but think that there's no way the NFL is going to avoid what every other sport on the planet has had to do, which is stop and readjust. When that stoppage of play will happen, I don't know, but I think they will be pigheaded and try to make sure that the camp starts on time because they want to prove that they're better than everyone else. But then reality is going to settle in and that they're going to have to make adjustments just like every other sports league.
Whether it's a delay or whether it's a temporary pause in camp or during the season, I think that there will probably be something like that. And you got to think that whichever teams have the most veteran players and whichever teams have a coaching staff that has been there for a long time, that you've got some consistency in your system, in your culture, and you've got some consistency in your personnel. If we're starting and stopping, we know that the camps themselves are going to be different. Just the formatics of it. We're talking about tiered systems, about where people can go and where they can't go. It's going to be a brand new situation for everybody. And the more consistency that's baked in, you would think that's an advantage. That if you've been with this coach for a long time, when we're running this offense and the quarterback's the same and the left tackle's the same and the star wide receiver is the same and the middle linebacker, defensive tackle, these are all the same guys. Does that give you an advantage, Key, if you just know, because your schedule to get ready is going to be so chaotic potentially, if I have some consistency and some I guess consistency is the right word, just baked in already, do I have an advantage?
You certainly not necessarily have an advantage, but you will not have to worry about having to alter things, so to speak, for it to be rough. It'll be smoother, but it's not necessarily an advantage because this is why players like Tom Brady is throwing with the guys that he's throwing with. So they can all get on the same page and carry it into training camp and into regular postseason, regular season or whatever. When they start playing, they can carry it into that. If you're already with a team, that learning curve is not significant, but you still have new pieces around and new players around. Cam Akers, running back from the Rams, is a rookie who hasn't been in the building and with the coaches in terms of real action versus virtual. He hasn't been with Jared Goff unless they're throwing individually, but that's something totally different than game planning and sitting in a room and going out on the field collectively as a team. So, and you can say the same thing about all the other teams within the Rams division, Seattle and San Francisco. You can say that about the Chargers and Denver. I mean, they all got to get in camps together.
If you look at a team like Cleveland, for instance, they got a new coach. They bring in a new coach who's going to bring in his own culture. He's got to get to know Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham and all the other guys there. That seems like you're at a massive disadvantage because not only do I have to learn everybody, not only do they have to learn me,
but we're going to have to do it on Zoom calls. We're going to have to do it with limited personal interaction. And it's just that the learning curve on a new system with a new guy seems almost too difficult to overcome. That, to your point with the Rams, that the Rams are going to have two new coordinators, but Sean McVay is still there. The Rams are going to add Cam Akers, but Aaron Donald, Jared Goff, and Robert Woods and Andrew Whitworth are still there. That seems like a really big deal to me.
Yeah, it is a big deal to have veteran leadership, because you don't have to worry about, like I said, you're going to have a couple guys that haven't been there that don't know certain things. But then you're going to have the majority of your team that has been there in the past that already know everything. So it's not going to be as much of a learning curve for them as it is the guys that has never been there, but it's only a small portion of those guys. It's not like you're walking in with 53 new faces. You know, you're walking in with 8 guys that really matter that's new. All the other guys ain't going to be on the team.
What about a team like the Chargers, where they're changing quarterbacks? That I know that Anthony Lynn is still there. I know that a lot of the personnel is still there. But the trigger guy, whether it's Tyrod Taylor or Justin Herbert, they're going to be new. Is that a wrinkle, that all of a sudden you got a guy that's been playing college football out of the spread forever and ever? He's your 6th pick. You're trying to get him ready. You got Tyrod Taylor, who's been there but hasn't started for a long time. Or is this just, hey, look, everything else is exactly the same. Drop that guy in there. Let's keep it moving.
I think everything is the same with Tyrod Taylor, because he knows the system. But Justin Herbert's going to have to understand the system and get involved in the system. And the only way he's able to do that is by getting the reps. Once camp opens up, he'll be able to get the reps, share the reps, be able to show that he can play in the drop back system at times versus out of the gun. When you look at Tyrod Taylor, he knows the offense. It's been with him since Buffalo, so it's not anything different for him. His ability will get him through.
You know that somebody's going to use it as an excuse. You know it. You know that, well, you know, the off-season program was a jumbled mess.
Well, of course they are. I mean, that's what they do. They don't do that.
It's not an excuse, though. It's a reason. It's a reason. I mean, it's not an excuse. It's a legitimate reason, though, as to why things may not be running smoothly for any of us or for any entity. So I wouldn't look bad on a franchise if they pointed to this disjointed beginning to the season. And certainly if the season gets suspended.
You do understand you're not tackling nobody in the offseason. The first time you're touching somebody with pads on is in training camp, which they're going to have. So to try to say that we didn't have May and June and April to do offseason stuff with our team is why we started off 1-3.
Yeah, but somebody's going to start off 3-1.
Either you need it or you don't. Either you need it though or you don't. And if it's not important, why are you doing it?
To be honest with you, you don't need it. They want you to have it because they want it. Players
don't need it. The tackling specifically you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about those off-season, you know, all that off-season stuff. The dudes is running mountains and lifting weights regardless. The coaches want you there because they want you there because they're miserable at home and they want to be in the office. But you don't need it.
Kingsbury looks like he's happy at home.
Yeah, I'd be happy there. I'd look like I could post up and watch the Flyers drink some wine.
No, for real,
because
we used to have to tell the coaches all the time, just because you don't want to be home with your family don't mean we don't want to be home with ours.
Ramona Shelburne is going to join us next. We're getting closer to the players going to Orlando and the relaunch of the NBA season. That's coming up on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. We've got our fingers crossed. We are getting closer to the reboot of the NBA season. Joining us right now, ESPN NBA insider, friend of the show, Ramona Shelburne on the Sprint People's Hotline. Ramona, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
All right.
Really good. Really good. So we have 16 players out of more than 300 that were tested.
Yeah.
Have tested positive for the coronavirus. What does this mean? And does this impede in any way what we're hoping to have happen in Orlando?
You know, I don't think so. I actually thought that was a pretty low number, to be honest. Like, I did a quick math on that, and it's 5.3%. I don't know. I mean, in places where there's outbreaks, then, you know, like Texas, the governor, it's somewhere around 10% of people who are tested are testing positive. So that's, you know, I actually think that's a pretty reasonable number to start with. If anything, you know, right now they've built in some time right now for players to test positive, be quarantined for 14 days, make their way to join their teams eventually. So the bigger question is, how many people test positive after this? Because now is when, now that they're starting to test and they're starting to get guys back in market, that's when all of the health and safety protocols are going to come into play. That's when people are supposed to be protected. So if you start, we really should see a lot less players testing positive from here on out. But this is a pretty low base number, I think.
So when you look at it, Ramona, and you have the players that are not testing positive, but eventually you like you said, there could be a case or two here or there. What happens to the not only the players but the rest of the organizations that'll be in the bubble if something happens to someone that is not on the floor?
So that is a big question. I know there's a whole set of procedures where you have one positive test, you go to like this isolation hotel. they take you out of the normal team hotel and put you in the isolation hotel. But there is instances of false positives, so they will run the sample that they took from you again just to make sure it wasn't a false positive. Then they will also take another sample a day later to see if that's a positive or a negative. And I think that's kind of important, guys, because we've seen this at a couple of boxing fights so far where a fighter or a manager, somebody in their corner tests positive, and then like a day later they're negative. And we don't know if it was a false positive. We don't know, if it was just they were positive one day, but their viral load was really low and they weren't contagious. Either way, the NBA has kind of set up protocols for that. So it's possible you test positive and there was a mistake. You're in the isolation hotel for 72 hours and then you have two negative tests and you're out. But whether it's a player, a staffer, a coach, there's going to be other people in the bubble. There's going to be media relations people. There's going to be trainers, right? So all of these people are subject to the same condition. If you have, once they do that whole series that I told you about of testing, once you're confirmed positive, let's say all the samples they run on you, positive, then you have to be in isolation for 14 days. And you don't get out of there until you have two negative tests in a row, I think 24 hours apart. So even if you're asymptomatic, even if you don't feel anything, you feel fine, whatever, you got to stay away from your team. And I think that's obviously good protocol, but it could be very disruptive to an NBA season if you have, a couple of players like that.
Ramona Shelburne joining us here on the morning show. Ramona, Jackie McMullen mentioned that she spoke with some players and some coaches who are going to go. They're going to enter the bubble. They're going to restart the season, but that they're not dying to go do it. When you've talked to players, coaches, executive media members, whatever it might be, is there a significant percentage of people that are going into this reluctantly, that they're doing it more out of obligation than they think it's the right thing to do?
Oh, yeah. I don't think anybody wants to do this. I mean, like, when you talk to people, like, there are maybe a few people, maybe LeBron is, maybe LeBron, Jared Dudley, whatever, the guys on the Lakers, because they have a real chance at winning it. But for the most part, everybody's just, they're just doing this, right? Like, they're going in, knowing it's gonna suck, right, to be there. I've said this to people, I know it's a silly throwaway line, but I kind of think this is going to be true. I really believe that the bubble is going to be one of the safest places on Earth because of the level of testing that you're going to have and the quality of healthcare that you're having. I mean, I think it's going to be overkill, to be honest. But the good, that's what you have to have. And, it's probably going to be safer than just walking around wherever you're from, wherever you're, whatever city you're in. Probably going to be safer than that. And, I think you're probably going to be, more likely to die of boredom than coronavirus.
I was going
to
say.
In the bubble.
With that in mind, Ramona, is it more a reluctance to go in there because they just don't want to be inconvenienced of being sequestered for a long period of time, or are they worried about their health?
No, I think it's the first thing. I think it's going to be really boring. Look, these are 20 to 30-something guys who are used to having a very fun social life, whether that's with your family, whether that's out on the town, whether you're a single guy, married guy, whatever. I don't know. I've talked to some media people who I know are either going to go in or they're deciding on whether they go in. That life does not sound fun in that bubble.
Man, stay in the bubble. It ain't that hard. Watch some movies. Stay in the bubble. Watch some movies. Go swimming. You don't
get video games.
They not, why would you, especially in Florida, why would you go outside the bubble and take a chance on doing what to yourself?
Look,
you know, like, why? Team, why?
I mean, this, you know, I think
it's not that hard. It's 2 months. Playing.
So I think here's what I hope, and this is what I hope happens. You know, a lot of NBA players, when you see them in the locker room now, whether it's, you know, players, coaches, staff, like, we don't see a lot of people talking in the locker room. We see a lot of people on their headphones, on their playing on their phones, whatever it is. Not a lot of, like, camaraderie like they're, like, maybe when you grew up, okay, you know, playing, because without a cell phone and all that stuff. I really think this could be an amazing, fun time because you'll be forced to talk to each other. You'll be forced to hang out with your teammates. You'll be forced to hang out with people in the bubble with you going through this shared experience. Now, you can't get too close to them. You know, those like cards in your room, like cards outside in the common area or something. But I think this could be really cool. And, you know, these are all very first world problems, right? I like to remind myself of that these days when I start complaining about, you know, oh, man, I'm just, you know, what I wouldn't give to go to a movie right now or what I wouldn't go to the restaurant. It's like, oh, shut up, Ramona. That's a very first world problem, right?
It is a very first world problem, Ramona.
Yeah.
It is. But I am curious, when you think about what the Lakers are trying to do with the roster and now that Avery Bradley is not going to be playing, are you concerned at all that a J.R. Smith or any other player who has been with the team for the whole won't view the coronavirus and the bubble in the same way and may decide that they're okay with leaving and coming back?
Well, this is what's going to be interesting, LZ, is how easy is it going to be to just get out and to leave? You know, I think you're there, and they don't have, like, armed guards or surveillance or anything like that that's officially looking at you and watching who's coming and going. But I know they definitely have people who are watching who's coming and going. So whether you see them or not, I think it's going to be pretty hard to get out. Like,
Ramona,
you don't have a car there.
Ramona, you think somebody is actually going to go out even though they told not to? You think that the
100%.
Really?
100%. Yes.
Are you not looking outside the window, Keyshawn?
No, but I'm talking about...
Are you not looking outside the window?
No. I'm talking about NBA players and executives that are told not to leave. They're told, like, do not go outside this area, period. Do you still think that somebody is going to do it? Multiple people are going to do it.
Do not drink and drive. Do not drink and drive.
But this ain't the same. No, this is not. But this is
not. Do not hit your girlfriend or wife.
This is not the same thing.
Seriously, Keith?
No, this is not the same thing as that, though. This is not the same. You cannot correlate doing those things to
this
is what I'm talking about.
So what's training camp like? What is training camp like? When you're at an NFL training camp, what's it, 3-4 weeks?
You're in training camp, about three weeks locked in some dorms, and pretty much you get a day or two off here or there where you can go and you can do things. But for the most part, your itinerary in your itinerary basically is set for you those 3 weeks. You know where you're going to be, what time you're going to be there, when your break is, and you don't have time to do anything.
Right.
You don't have time to do nothing. Every now and then you get one out of 3 weeks, you might get 4 days off out of that three and a half weeks where you get the day off where you now can go and enjoy something. But we were not under a pandemic of a situation where if you contract the virus and transfer it to somebody, we were not in that situation. And guys within the itinerary.
Could you get people in and out of training camp? Like if you had your wife or girlfriend or whatever, like could you get her in and out?
No, you couldn't get them, no. No, you couldn't because there's security at the points of the doors that wouldn't allow that to happen. So you would have to not give you all of that.
Like, here's what I hear, all right? Like, a lot of players sort of feel, I think initially they're going to be okay. Everybody's going to be into it, you know. But as the weeks go on, and especially if you're on a team, let's say you're on one of those team that is trying to get in. Like, you're not part of the playoffs, but you're trying to play your way in. Let's say you're the Washington Wizards. You're already 5.5 back. You lose the first three games out of the chute, which means you're not actually going to have any way of getting there. You're not going to get within four games to compete for that eighth seed. So you're basically just there for nothing. You're just playing games. I mean, that's who people are worried about. When teams lose and they're out of it and they're not part of the playoff picture, they don't have the same buy-in, same motivation. That's when people are worried about it. Like, okay, if I leave and get caught, whatever, we're done anyway. Like that I think is the scenario that a lot of people I talk to who are going into the bubble, that's what they're worried about.
Ramona Shelburne.
It's possible. Yeah, sorry.
No, excuse me, Ramona. I didn't mean to cut you off right there. Ramona, thanks so much for coming on. Appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
You got it, boys.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? Let's continue that conversation because, Key, you obviously don't think that people are going to try to sneak out, and I think it's inevitable. And by the way, it doesn't have to be a player necessarily. There's a whole bunch of other people that are going to be in there as well. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your teenager to help around the house?
Okay, Mom, I emptied the dishwasher, vacuumed the basement, and folded the sheets out of the dryer.
Wait, what?
Oh, and next, I'm going to clean Mitten's litter box.
Are we in some kind of prank show or something? That's a camera, isn't it?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.